I want to start off the first podcast, Elliot, by talking about hockey, by not talking about hockey. Do you know who Jim Rose is? Or maybe who Jim Rose was?
No.
Jim Rose of the Jim Rose Circus. This was like this alt-freak grunge circus from the early 90s. Okay, he toured with Lollapalooza. Jim Rose was a street performer in Seattle.
Okay.
And just, you know, street performing for, you know, $5 here, $10 there. Eventually he was able to put together his own touring company. This was like the opposite of Barnum and Bailey. This was freak shows. This was heavily tattooed people lifting things with various body parts. Google Mr. Lifto. I will not talk about Mr. Lifto on this program, but you can imagine, as I can see you wincing already, what the vibe is.
I've seen that act before, and it gives me the heebie-jeebies.
There's blood, and there's chainsaws and darts in people's backs. Anyway, it was that kind of circus. I loved it. And in 1995, when I was doing a radio show with Strombo and Macko, we got to interview him. And the guys knew that I loved Jim Rose. Big, huge fan. So I ended up spending an entire afternoon with him. I ended up having lunch with him. And so I'm little fanboy asking a bajillion questions of Jim Rose. And we got around to the origins of Jim Rose and the Jim Rose Circus. And I said, you know, were there any times where you just thought it was going nowhere, I've hit a wall, I'm ready to pack it in? And he said, you're just starting your career, right? And this was 1995, so I was.
Yep.
Right out of university. I didn't even think that I was going to end up where I'm at now. I thought I was going back to the cemetery to bury people because of my job at university. And I said, yeah, I'm just getting started now. And he said, let me give you some advice or something you should always remember. The hardest thing, never forget this. He looked at me, takes off his sunglasses. We're having dinner at Fran's up at Young and Eglinton. Takes off his glasses and puts them down. So you know something profound is coming out of Jim Rose's mouth. He says, the hardest decision you will ever make in your career is whether to quit or work harder. I was 25 years old when he told me that, and that always stuck with me. And various places in my career, maybe yours as well, you've had that decision. Am I done here, or do I just need to work harder? There's no right answer or no obvious right answer. You just pick one of them, and then you live with it. As I'm reading 31 Thoughts this week and reading about Jeff Glass, I'm wondering the same thing. 13 years after he's drafted by the Ottawa Senators, he gets his NHL debut finally with the Chicago Blackhawks and picks up his first win. 13 years after being drafted, we all remember him, well, most of us do, from that 2005 World Junior team in Grand Forks, a traveling all-star team, most of which should have been in the NHL. I wonder how many times Jeff Glass faced that exact same question. Am I done here, or do I just need to work harder?
I think you face it a lot. Now, I have a similar question I ask myself, and it's kind of funny because I'm 47 now, so I'm getting close to this age. But the question I would always ask myself, Jeff, was, when I'm 50, am I going to regret it if I don't do this? Yep. Or if I'm 50, am I going to regret it if I don't stick with this? That was my guiding question. And when I speak to people now, whether it's in university or high school, and they ask me about following your dream, that's the question I always tell them. Ask yourself, when I'm 50, am I going to regret not doing this or sticking with this?
Did you ever get a sense that Glass, to draw this back into hockey again, is challenging as that may be during this conversation, but did you ever get a sense of Glass ever had that dilemma? Or that athletes in general that stick with it ever have that doubt?
One thing I've learned, and I've become a pretty confident person in my ability over the years, but I think no matter how confident you are, you always face doubts. Something happens that doesn't go well for you, or you make a mistake or something like that, and it does shatter you, and you have to build it back. Nobody gets through life unscathed, right? So you always face that crisis of confidence or that something that gets you. I don't know Jeff Glass that well. I've chatted with him a couple of times, but I would guess that the time it happened to him, maybe where this story comes in, is when in the summer of 2016 when he first called Pete Fry. And Pete Fry is the guy we speak to at the top of 31 Thoughts this week.
He's a Toronto guy, isn't he?
I believe he was born there, but I think he grew up out west.
Okay.
I'm probably saying something factually incorrect, which is not the last time that will happen on this podcast.
We'll have fact checkers, just so you
That's
know.
That's right, at the end of the show, which is the big thing now in TV. But Pete Fry goes out to out west. He goes to the Western Hockey League. He played for Victoria. He played two other teams.
He played Portland.
Yes, he played in Portland. He gets drafted by the New Jersey Devils in 1987. He said it was Max McNabb's last draft. Lou Lamoriello came in early the next season, mm-hmm. but that was Max McNabb's last draft as GM of the New Jersey Devils. And he says, yeah, we got Alain Chevrier, Bob Sauvé, and still to come, we've got Kirk McLean, we've got Chris Terreri, we've got Sean Burke, and they have Craig Billington. And Billington had been in the NHL the year before. He says, I don't have a chance. And he blows it. He shows up, and the only time he speaks to Doug Carpenter, the coach, is when Doug Carpenter comes up and says, do you know who scored worst on our fitness test? Oh, I guess that's me. And so Pete Fry, by his own admission, he totally failed because he didn't have the attitude for it. So when he retires, he becomes basically a mental coach. First, he starts coaching goalies, and then he says, no, I'm going to work on the mental side of the game. He goes and sees Tony Robbins. He goes and reads books, and he says, you know, there's something here, and it's the reason I failed. And so Jeff Glass calls him in 2016 in the summer, and I think obviously that's when Glass was in a tough spot. He'd finished up in the KHL. He's about to go into the American Hockey League, and that's probably where his crisis of confidence comes. And he calls Pete Fry and says, can you help me?
You know, sometimes it's a phone call, and I can't help but thinking about Devin Dubnyk, who is another goalie reclamation project and playing quite nicely, thank you very much, the past couple of seasons for the Minnesota Wild. And that moment for him, as he's talked about numerous times, was playing in the American Hockey League with Hamilton of the AHL in a hotel, looking outside his window at a coffee shop and saying, how did I get here? You know, I was a first-round draft pick from the Kamloops Blazers with the Edmonton Oilers. And now I'm looking at a back alley out of a hotel room playing in the minors.
Yes.
And that's the moment where it's, okay, one of two things I can do here. I can work harder or I can quit.
You know, it's funny about that too. You're right. Same thing with Dubnyk. But I remember because that year, everybody forgets that he was in the Montreal Canadiens organization.
Let him go home.
Yes.
That was big.
So Carey Price gets hurt in the playoffs against the New York Rangers. And, you know, they have a couple of other goaltending choices. And someone says to me, wait a sec, didn't they have Devin Dubnyk too? Like Dustin Tokarski plays, and they also have Peter Budaj. But someone said to me, don't they have Dubnyk? And I went, oh, yeah. And you're right. Like they had their first child, I believe, and he really wasn't playing. Mm-hmm. So we said, can I go home and be with my family? And they said, sure. And you know, Jeff.
When does that happen?
Exactly.
Ever.
And I remember a conversation I had with him, so I called him, and he was great. I talked to him, and I said, let me make a couple other calls, because I wrote about him for the blog. And you know what I found out is guys told me, like, he didn't listen on other teams. I had to call him back, and I said, you know, Devin, like, off the record, I'm getting this yeah. vibe on you. And he said, you know, you're not the first one to tell me that, and I agree that that was the big thing that changed him, was he realized he had to learn a different way or learn other ideas to play goal.
Oh, hi, you're here. Thanks so much for joining us. Welcome to 31 Thoughts, the podcast.
This is Doug McLean. When I was an NHL GM, I didn't have a lot of time for Jeff and Elliot. And now that I'm an analyst, I still don't.
I want to thank Doug McLean for our very first intro to the program. I don't know if this is going to turn into the Simpsons couch gag, Elliot, where every week there's a different sort of montage from someone else or a different quip or a different insult from someone in or maybe even outside of the industry. But
I like
it. Wanted to get Doug to do something special off the top.
You know, people do ask me, like, you know, what's it like to work with that guy who's always yelling and is always angry sounding? The best part about it is, you know, we work together on Wednesdays, and he'll come in and he goes, I really tried to get through your blog this week, but I had a lot of trouble.
Well, you know what he calls it to me, and this afternoon on Hockey Central did the same. 15 thoughts.
Yes.
Because that's all he can make it to. And then he needs to lie down. So that's it. I can make it to 15.
You know, Damian Cox used to say that too. We work together. It's 15 thoughts spread out into 30. You know, and it's funny. Over the years, I've had a couple guys I've worked with come to me. Back when we were still under the CBC umbrella, it was Glenn Healy and PJ Stock. And yep. Doug did it earlier this year. And he said, you know, you need some one-sentence thoughts. And I said, you know, why do you guys say that? And they said, you know, it's a lot, especially they edit it differently at CBC than they do here. I actually like the way they do it here in the sense that CBC, they kept every thought one big block.
Right.
CBC breaks them up a bit into paragraphs, but they were like, it's too much sometimes. Like, give me a little bit of a breather. So I do try to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I know the listeners of this podcast are very smart, but for guys like Glenn and PJ and Doug, I realize that you have to have some smaller sentences. So I do that for them.
Okay, so for Glenn, PJ, and for Doug, thought seven, I wonder if the Islanders take a look at Robin Leonard. That one's for those guys.
Yes, and it also, I think the other thing too is you just have to be careful in this day and age how you phrase things because – you know, anybody who's familiar with my work knows that I get annoyed sometimes at some of the people who do aggregation
mm-hmm.
because they'll take something and occasionally I've had battles with Sportsnet over it too. They'll take something and they'll run with it and it's not really in the context you intended. So, you know, with Leonard, I think the Islanders have scouted him. I don't think that's anything secretive. They've really lost confidence in Greiss. You know, Halak has been some good nights, some rough nights. I just wonder if they look for a change. And Leonard being a UFA probably doesn't cost you a lot. And, you know, the thing about Leonard is he's had some really good stretches in his career. And maybe a change for him, a team that is kind of in the playoff battle, I think you hope it inspires them. So I wonder if they go that route.
You see, I look at the Islanders this year, Friedge, and I say to myself, of all the teams that are taking the season, crumpling it up, and throwing it away,
yeah.
Islanders are top of the list.
They're not throwing this away.
Well, by not addressing the goaltending issue.
Well,
this team scores goals.
Yes.
Like, this team can outscore you.
Yes.
But it's completely all being undone by the goaltending.
Yes, it is. But I think they look at it and see they have a second problem, too, and that is Calvin DeHaan's out for probably
the biggie.
Year. Yeah. And Boychuk has been out for a while, too. So I think, to me, it's two things. You can try to improve your blue line and hope that helps your goaltending, or you try to improve the goaltending. And I think they could potentially do both. You know, I wrote this week, I guess it's thought six because I know it's right above Leonard, is on Brock Nelson. And I don't necessarily think that Brock Nelson would be available right now if this wasn't such a massive season in the history of the New York Islanders. But I think in certain situations, and, you know, Garsneau is really quiet. I have a sense that he's probably only talking to teams that he sees a match,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not really sure who that is right now. But I think that he is considered Brock Nelson if he can get a defenseman that can solve his problems.
Brock Nelson is available because of Matthew Barzal, true or
false? Yes, that is true.
The performance of Barzal, and Barzal's a fascinating guy, and I got to know him a little bit at Memorial Cup last year. The first day, so Colby and I get there, Armstrong and Todd Warner. So we get there and we watch the Seattle Thunderbirds practice, and then we're sticking around to watch a Spitfires practice and its availability for Seattle. So we go and talk to the PR director, and who do you want to talk to? Well, you want to talk to Barzal, superstar, you know, first-round draft pick, shooting the lights out with probably the best passer, sorry, I mean, Jeremy Bracco, in the entire CHL. Want to talk to Matthew Barzal. And it's fascinating for each. So we're in the media area at the WFCU Center in Windsor, and the PR director introduces us to Matthew Barzal. And we say hello and ask a couple of questions, and you can tell that Barzal wants to talk about something. Like, you know, when you're talking to someone, and
he's
you can tell
talker.
He's a fabulous talker. You can tell that he's going through all the answers just so there's a break in the conversation, and he can start talking about what he wants to talk about. I stood there like a statue, watching him interview Colby Armstrong about Sidney Crosby and about his habits and what he does.
Mm.
Like, huge Crosby fan,
mm-hmm.
and huge. You know those guys that are all in. We talk a lot about Mark Scheifele being the all-in guy in Winnipeg.
Yep.
And even if he wasn't playing, he'd be in three different fantasy pools and be watching every game. And that's Mark Scheifele. Matthew Barzal's that guy too. And every time we saw him, it was another question to Colby about Crosby or about the Pittsburgh Penguins. What are his habits? What does he do? And I remember the first game that he played against the Pittsburgh Penguins. Like, what a thrill that must have been for Matthew Barzal. Like, he's a lot of players, when they're away from the game, when they're not playing, I'm not putting it on TV, I'm not going online, I'm not looking at it. Matthew Barzal is the opposite of that. He is the all-in guy.
I like that. I love hearing that stuff. Like, I've heard general managers and people in the game tell me before that they believe that players who are like that are better because they have a passion for the game, they're committed to understanding the game, and they're sponges. They want to learn as much as they can. Matthew Tkachuk is like that in Calgary. He's mm-hmm. a guy who watches a lot of hockey. Crosby, obviously, is very much like that too. You know, I got a tip earlier this year that there was a team that met with him before the draft, and said, what if we don't take you? And his answer to them was, like, good luck with that.
And so, there's more kids like that, by the way.
Yes.
Michael DiPietro, as a quick aside, Michael DiPietro.
Oh, the goalie.
Yeah, the goaltender. Yeah. Vancouver ended up taking him, right? He's fantastic with the Windsor Spitfires. He's on the smaller side. You know, so is Tyler Parsons. Big deal. Calgary drafts him, wins the Memorial Cup with London. Mm-hmm. And obviously Michael DiPietro won it with the Windsor Spitfires last year. And one of the teams, and I don't know whether a team is doing this because they mean it or they're just trying to see what reaction you have. Michael told me, and I'm not telling tales out of school. We've talked about this publicly before. He said, one team said, we think you're too small. We can't win with a small goaltender. Or you can't win in the NHL with a small goaltender. We don't think you'll ever make it in the NHL. And instead of just sort of shrugging your shoulders and saying, well, I guess that's your opinion, he said, well, I guess you have a problem with winning then. And the team kind of, whoa.
That's good.
Back into their chairs. So you're starting to see that vibe from young athletes more and more.
Well, and I love it. And so I reached out to Kimber Auerbach, who's the great media relations guy in New York with the Islanders. And I said, can we set something up with him? And he got back to me later that day. And, you know, so I said, I heard this story about you. And first of all, the thing that strikes you, and you'll know this, Barzal's confidence is unbelievable. Like, teenagers are really hit or miss. Mm-hmm. They're either really confident or they're really not. And he's very confident. So I said, I heard this story about you. And I said, he goes, what is it? And I go, the team said, what if we don't take you? And you take good luck. And you said, good luck with that. And he started laughing. He's like, so I knew it was true immediately. But he kind of paused and he's thinking, and I can see how he's processing this. He's thinking, I don't know what I should answer here. And he says to me, I don't know how I should answer this question. I said, well, the fact that you are answering like this tells me it's true.
Yeah.
And he laughed again. And he said, look, all I wanted to do is the same thing was I would answer that the way I would hope if I was running a team that the kid would answer it. And he did. I think the team was Boston, but he wouldn't tell me.
They had the three picks before.
Yes.
Right? That's well publicized.
Yes, I think the team was Boston, but he wouldn't tell me.
Interesting. You see some Denny Savard in him? I always make this point on TV, and sometimes it's hit and sometimes it's missed. But when I watch him, we saw this with Savard so many times, do that circle move. And I know it's not patented by Savard or patented by Barzal right now, but when he's circling around that offensive zone, he's trying to find his lane and his head is up, right-hand shot, going all circling and circling like a shark, trying to find that perfect pass. Oh, there's Eberle. Oh, there's Ladd. Oh, I'm feeding it back to Letty. Is there some Denny Savard there for you? There is a lot of it for me.
People older than us would say it's Sarah Savard, not Denny Savard.
No spinorama.
But yes, I mean, like, he's creative, and there's no question now, I mean, if you're a creative player, the back pressure is so hard. The coaches are so good. Like, I wonder what it's going to be like when teams start seeing Barzal for the second and third time. Are they going to start taking things away from him? And is he going to have to adjust and find something new to do?
Usually you say that about goaltenders, where the first time around the horn, a goalie can look fantastic because no one's written the book yet.
I think goalies are almost all the same now. How many of them are different?
Oh, no. They all play almost an identical game.
Yes. But I see it with a guy like Barzal. First time you see him, you're like, what? And, you know, I wonder, the game is so well coached now, Jeff, that I just wonder if you're going to get to where they're going to adjust and say, he likes this spot, we're taking away that spot, and how is he going to adjust? But he strikes me as really smart.
But how do you do it? You can't set picks. This isn't basketball. We saw Patrick Waugh trying, and it worked for half a year with Colorado with the one-on-one, you know, junior hockey defense in the defensive zone. But I just don't know how you do it. And again, I'm not a coach, and I don't profess to be as smart as anyone behind the bench.
Well, no, and neither do I. I don't profess to be as smart as anybody, period. But, you know, you can funnel the play to certain ends of the ice. You can try to do certain things. You can always say, look, we're going to give you that area because we're not going to give you this area. I love that cat and mouse game. It's like last week with Carlson almost. Detroit, he's too far back.
Yeah, you mentioned that. Oh, Kipper mentioned this in your
thoughts. Yeah, Kipper mentioned it on Saturday night. And Detroit goes in and scores because he can't get to the puck quick enough. Two nights later, San Jose, he's up a little bit higher. Now they win the draw and go down the ice and score. But I think the great ones always make that tiny change, that imperceptible change that you don't see.
Skill adapts.
Yes.
Right? Like that's the motto. That was the Team Canada motto when it came to player selection, specifically from Sochi, where once upon a time, and we saw this model for years, you know, this is what our first line does. We're going to take players that fit that model. This is what a second line does. A third line does. This is what our fourth line checking line does. And Hockey Canada specifically had to change all that for the game now, specifically for Sochi. And I remember talking to someone there about player selection. He said, look, this is our motto. And you see the World Juniors now, too. Skill adapts.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? You're a first-line center on Swift Current. You're a fourth-line right-winger on this team. And if you're good enough to be a first-line center on a top-10 CHL team, chances are you're good enough to be a fourth-line checker. That's just because the way players grow up now in this program of excellence, and you're seeing it in USA Hockey as well. By the time you get to that level of proficiency, you can do a whole lot of everything.
You know what I've learned, and this is one of the people ask me, you know, I've been around now for 25 years since I left university. And people ask, what's one of the things that you've learned through that time? And I think the answer to that question is how good you have to be just to play one game professionally. If you make it to the NHL or the NBA or Major League Baseball or the NFL or even a major soccer league, you know, just for one game,
yep,
you're better than 99.9% of the people out there.
You know, I've always used the example when talking to someone about hockey. I've always used the example of boxing. And I'll always say this. Hockey, much like boxing, and this applies to other sports, hockey, much like boxing, proves that you have to be so good just to be bad. Like, to be player 750 in the NHL,
100%.
That guy's amazing.
Yes.
Elliot, I remember playing a pickup game a couple times. I used to play in this pickup game in the West End of Toronto. It was called Game 7 at 7. These are all guys, we would play Sunday night, 7 o'clock, and it was guys that played in Europe, a few guys played in the coast, and these guys were still going for it. I have no idea why I was playing in this game, but a couple of guys that I knew that played pro invited me in to play a few times. I remember once Pete Sarno came out, and Pete Sarno was a former, I think he won the AHL scoring title at least once, maybe twice. Really good player.
Like a good pro scorer.
Good pro scorer. And no one could touch him. No one could lift his stick. Like, he was doing whatever he wanted. And I'm sitting on the bench, and I'm watching Pete Sarno, and I'm saying to myself, this is the most amazing hockey player I've ever shared the ice with, ever. And he's never going to play in the NHL. Never get a sniff in the National Hockey League. And you can only imagine how good you have to be to play in the NHL, to your point, to just play one game, just get called up to play that one single time.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be so good just to be bad.
Incredible.
It's remarkable. On that, we're going to take our first break, step away from 31 Thoughts, the podcast, back to talk a little bit about, we'll pick up the conversation about the game and creativity. Some interesting comments in La Presse by one of the more creative and most creative players we've ever seen, Alex Kovalev. Stay tuned.
Saturday. It's going to be a good day. Always is. It's because of all the games during the week. The one played on Saturday night is a special one. This is the story of a love affair between a country and a game. If you want to try and teach someone about Canada, you go to the television Saturday night and it becomes crystal clear. Hockey Night in Canada on CBC and Sportsnet.
Welcome back to the podcast. Tease these Kovalev comments, Elliot. You've seen them from La Presse.
Yes.
A couple really stand out to me. And you hear this a lot from ex-players. Ah, the game today, the grousing and the complaint. Ah, the game today. Ah, when I played, there was creativity in it. But here's one of the more creative players that we've ever seen. You know, L'Artiste, you know, the artist playing with the Montreal Canadiens. This is Alex Kovalev talking about the game. He says, I'm not watching hockey anymore. We skate hard. We shoot hard. There is more creativity, nothing. It is not pleasant to watch. I do not like the way hockey has evolved.
Mm-hmm.
The problem I always have when I hear comments like this is we're assuming that we're freezing the game right now. Like, we don't know where this is heading. I don't know what this game is going to look like in 5 years. Right now, there's speed. Like, it's fast.
Yes.
Like, you get from one end of the ice to the other end of the ice really quickly. We're starting now to see more east-west play. Like, this is a real north-south game in mm-hmm. North America. And you may say, oh, it's rink size, bodies on the ice, all that kind of stuff. We're starting to see, we just talked about Matthew Barzal, we're starting to see some east-west play come into it now. And I've always said that, you know, the first thing you have to get if you want a fast and creative game, the first thing you're going to get is fast. And then you're going to learn, we talk about skill adapts, then you're going to have to learn to adapt at that speed. And it may take a generation of athletes to get there. The one thing when Connor McDavid entered the NHL, you know, he was that part of that first generation that didn't have to stop doing anything. They didn't have to break any habits. They didn't have to stop clutching and holding and water skiing and all that kind of stuff in the game in order to learn a new game. Like, they didn't have to stop the way they were playing and do something different. It's just the game to them. That's just the way they've grown up with that rules package. That's just what they know is the game. So when I see comments from like this from Kovalev, I always take it with a grain of salt because we don't know where this thing is heading now. That comment brings with it this idea that this is a snapshot, boom, and this is going to be frozen like this, and this is the way the game is going to be played, period. I don't buy that.
The one thing I totally agree with you on is that if you look now, what are players doing in the off season?
Skills training.
Not weightlifting as much anymore. They're working on their bodies.
They're doing what goalies have always done.
They're doing...
Worked on their game.
They're doing some strength training, but not as much as they used to. You're right. It's all skills. And where's that going to take us in 5 years? The game has changed a lot. Like, we watched last Saturday, if anybody watched the show, at 7 o'clock Eastern, the opening for Toronto-Vancouver was 94 Stanley Cup semifinal, which was a rough series. And we showed a lot of that stuff that boiled over. Mm-hmm. That doesn't happen in the regular season anymore. Very rarely. That is the biggest difference to me between the NHL 20 years ago or 25 years ago and now. The nastiness of the regular season is gone. The playoffs, you never have to worry about. There are some mean games in the regular season, but mostly not. So what are you going to get to replace that? Because people did like that. I think what you have to get to is that skill completely taking over the game and being allowed to play. And right now, I think the coaching is still so good that they're really risk averse. Be simple.
Mm-hmm.
I think if there's one thing I could change about the game right now, it would be having a group of people, whether it's the competition committee, and you've got it, every year, how can we make the game more offensive? How can we make it better? Not necessarily easier, but better for the offensive players to shine.
John Shannon and I had Gary Bettman on the Hockey Central Saturday show 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him that question. I asked about R&D camps in the offseason for trying different things. And he brought up the Shanahan Summit, and we've tried these things before. Because I agree with you. I'll echo that. And I'll say that every summer there should be something. And maybe it's done with minor pro hockey players, a way to make a couple of bucks in the summer. And you almost set up a mini summer league where it's okay. And you know what? This summer we're playing without blue lines. This summer we're playing with bigger nets. This summer we're playing 4-on-4. This summer we're only playing with one coach. This summer we're whatever it is. But just to try it to see where it leads. Because I think a lot of the things that we'd like to try in the game, normally the default is, well, you know what, we'll try it at the American Hockey League. See, I don't like that. It was one thing for visors, but to try to profoundly change the game at the AHL level and then graduate it to the NHL, you're asking players who get shuttled up and down to play two completely different games during the season. And
also,
I think
they're not gimmicks.
Think that's
they're trying
unfair.
To make a living. They're trying to earn jobs.
Totally.
I'm with you there.
I think that's really
they're
unfair.
They're not gimmicks.
So
yeah.
That's why I like this idea of doing it in the summer. And you can play. Listen, I think that's a TV sport. I think that's a live event sport as well. It may not have, you know, the sexy NHL names involved in it, but it's guys that play in the East Coast League or wherever that can still play at a relatively high level. And they try different things to see if they work. Because what will the game look like if we, say, for example, remove blue lines and remove the center line and get rid of icing and get rid of offsides and turn it more into roller hockey? I don't know. I have an idea in my head what it will look like and how it will be played and what the strategies will be. But ultimately, I don't know.
I've known you for 20 years. That's the first good idea you've ever come up with.
I have another one. Well, I'll drop it a little bit later on. It involves
well,
the All-Star game.
We'll decide if it's good or not.
So Kovalev's comments. I mean, I've always been a – it's tough not to be a fan of the skill of Kovalev. But when you look back at certain careers and you say to yourself, man, if this guy only would have brought it every single game – I know it might be impossible – brought it almost every single game. Is Kovalev's story not the one of – what could have been? Because if you talk to anybody who shared the ice with them, they'll always sing from the same hymn book, this guy was the best on the ice.
You know the great story about him, about how Keenan wouldn't let him go off the ice, right?
Scored a goal.
Well, he thought that was fantastic, and he was getting punished. For those of you who are not familiar, Kovalev was known for his really long shifts. And he, one game, Keenan said, fine, I'm not letting you off the ice. Because you're taking too long shifts, you're disrupting the team. So Kovalev stayed out there, and he loved it. Like he scored.
I talked to Mike, and Mike said, oh, well, I was going to bring him off the ice, but then he scored. And I said, damn it, we got to leave him out there longer to punish him.
And the other players were laughing because Kovalev was laughing. He thought it was the best thing that ever happened to him. You know, he used to drive teams crazy for that reason. And I remember Colin Campbell saying that you want to trade Alex Kovalev, and then you realize, uh-oh, we trade Alex Kovalev. Yeah. What do we need? We need
Kovalev.
Alex Kovalev. One of the things you understand is, I don't know anybody listening to this, there's obviously the analytical thinkers and there's the artistes, right? One doesn't understand the other. I used to be, when I was young, I used to be a really artsy thinker, and then somewhere I changed and I became more of an analytical thinker. And so I just have learned over the years, you've got to accept artists for who they are. That's them, and that's what they're going to do. Ron, for example, is an artist. There's sometimes he comes up with stuff that I look at and I'm like, wow. Like, I don't know if I would draw that conclusion, but I know that 99 times out of 100, the stuff he comes up with is genius. So you live with the one thing that's just really weird. But that's just the way it is. You have to accept that people think differently than you, and you better make room for them.
You know, I had a conversation.
By the way, Daniel Alfredson,
yes,
who almost never lost keep away, said Kovalev was the toughest guy he ever went against.
Datsyuk was great at that, too. He couldn't lift up his stick. I remember countless Detroit Red Wings players saying in practice, much like Gordie Howe, another famous Red Wing from so many years before, you could not lift up the guy's stick. And it wasn't as if, you know, it wasn't as if Pavel Datsyuk was a specimen. He was just heavy on his stick. You did a Hockey Night feature on Datsyuk so many years ago, and didn't he sort of vanish for his workouts?
Yes.
And like you wouldn't let anyone see him working out.
Wiry but strong.
And that was him. Yeah, I remember talking to someone. I've got to be very careful here because I always said I would never say who it was.
Who
the player was. I'm not going to say who the player was.
What team were they on?
This is from Western Conference. Western Conference. And it was a superstar player who very famously once said to his coach, it's like, look it. Here's what's going to happen this season. You're going to get 30 good games out of me, or I'm going to be one of the three stars. You're going to get 30 games where you can't find me.
Is it Brett Hull?
It's not Brett Hull. I'm not going to keep playing this guessing game. The 30 games, you're not going to find me. And for the remainder of the season, we'll just see how I feel that day.
Was it Alexander Mogilny?
And as a fan of hockey, you say to yourself, you want your athletes to bring it every single night. That's what you pay for, and that's what you want to see. But the more players that I get to know and talk to, the idea of pacing through a season is pretty important.
If sports science is changing it.
If you want to have any juice left for the playoffs. When I first heard that, I was kind of revolted about, like, really? Like, NHL, people would die and dream to play in the National Hockey League. But that, to me, makes a whole lot of sense. It sucks, but it makes a whole lot of sense to me.
Was it Paul Kariya?
I'm not going to tell you who it was, Elliot.
First of all, I think that's changing because of sports science. I think there is an understanding now that you can't give it your all. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they'll ever admit it publicly, but you're not expected to give it your all. When Mike Gillis ran Vancouver, he and Lawrence Gilman would tell me they knew there are games where because of the schedule and going east, they were dead. But they would never say which games they were. But, you know, you kind of could guess.
Yeah.
You know, there's a story I always tell. It's one of my favorite stories about any athlete, Michael Jordan. You'll remember when we were back at the Fan together, I covered basketball for the Fan. The third year of the Raptors' history, they traded Damon Stoudemire, and 3 days later they had a game with the Bulls. And the Bulls were at the height of their power, and the Raptors had 8 players. They knew they were going to get killed.
Mm-hmm.
They were down, I think, 25 at the half. Like, Joe Klein, who was like the 12th man, was going through them for layups. It was such a joke. And my seat when I worked at the Fan was right near the visitor bench. So they come out for the start of the third quarter. Phil Jackson goes up to Michael Jordan and says, Michael, take the rest of the night off. This game's a joke.
Yeah.
That's when they played in the Dome. There were 36,000 people in the stands.
To see Jordan.
Yeah. Jordan turned to Phil Jackson and said, these fans, they haven't had their show yet. So he comes out in the third quarter. He scores 19 points, many of them spectacular. And right in front of me, he walks off the court at the end of the third quarter, looks at Phil Jackson and says, now you can take me out.
They've had their show.
They've had their show. And I gained a ton of respect for him in that moment. Like, he knew that there were 36,000 people there in a god-awful Raptors season who were there, paid money to see him play, and he was going to show up. Sports science now dictates that you can't do that. And I think that's going to be an interesting thing. That's, you talk about where sports are going. Sports are going to tell you, you should sit out this guy, or this guy isn't going to be able to give it to you tonight. I understand that a lot of the times fans pay their money for their ticket and you take a risk that a guy's injured. This is one I get concerned about for fans, and I think leagues are going to have a problem. The NBA had a problem with it last year. I know there are teams, the NHL, Anaheim admitted it with Ryan Getzlaff. He admitted they talked about it. When do we get to the point where teams start saying, I want you to take a night off?
Well, and specifically when you have premium pricing for quote-unquote premium teams.
Yeah.
Based on superstars. You know, I paid, you know, X amount of dollars extra to see the Pittsburgh Penguins. Why are you sitting 87 and 71? How come I can't see those players that I'm being asked to pay extra for?
Because sports science dictates.
Tell you, like,
you go. And a lot of these teams really buy it.
You know, I've always said, you know, if I could do one thing to the end, well, it's one of the things. But one of the big ones is, A, get your game out of June. I think we talked about this before. Get your game out of June. Shorten the schedule. And if you can couch it as a player safety issue, that
you
might
know, be Jim
the
Rutherford's
way to get it.
You know, Jim Rutherford's idea, going to July.
Holy
smokes.
Make
the season longer, start it later. And he wasn't the only one. Like, there are other teams that agreed with Rutherford on that. He went public with it a few years ago.
Does that make it longer because you want to get it away from football and baseball?
Football, especially in the States. Jim was still in, I'm pretty sure he was still in Carolina at the time when he told me that one.
Yeah.
And he did make it public. He spoke to a few people about that. He's got a lot of good ideas. But that was interesting because his theory was, look, only the fans of the teams that are in the Stanley Cup Final care about it anyway. And in Canada, they're going to watch it
anyway.
although we're testing that now. And his theory was get away from football and maybe make the schedule longer.
Turn hockey more into a summer sport. Winter summer sport.
I got to tell you,
as a guy who covers
the Stanley Cup Final, I don't know if I like this idea.
So then we're pushing the draft where deeper into July, so everyone gets a cozy 2 weeks off to do their business, and then we're right in the training camp.
I got
to
tell you, I wonder how many years into such a schedule would I be getting a divorce? One, two.
I'll be ending up in divorce court first thing Monday morning at the end of the schedule.
I remember when I was dating my wife. Oh, she hope she doesn't listen to this. The second year we were dating was 2008, and I was still a ringside reporter at the time. Mm-hmm. And so I'm on the road for 2 months during the playoffs, and she hates hockey. She likes baseball. She likes basketball. She's not a big hockey fan.
Yeah.
So I remember the Stanley Cup Final is Pittsburgh and Detroit. I call her one night from Pittsburgh, and she goes, is it always going to be like this? And I go, if the Leafs don't start making the playoffs – And I knew once we survived that.
Yeah, that's it.
But a Stanley Cup Final in July might bring it back in.
See, I had the opposite. When Claire and I had our first child, born 7:30 on a Saturday, I had a men's league game the Sunday at 2 o'clock, and she kicked me out of the hospital to go play because I was annoying her. Being around, she could tell that I wanted to go play. I'm like, no, I'm staying here. She's like, TJ's sleeping. Go. Get lost.
I don't think there's a person listening, I should say a man listening to this podcast who hasn't been kicked out of the house by their partner before because they were annoying.
They were annoying.
And every guy listening to this can understand that.
Well, we'll step aside, come back and talk about the All-Star Game. And Elliot, I have an idea. And spoiler, no, it's not John Scott, the sequel. Stay tuned. 31 Thoughts, the podcast continues.
Hockey Central Saturday on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Tune in every Saturday starting at 5 p.m. for NHL game coverage on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome back to the podcast, 31 Thoughts, the podcast. Jeff Merrick alongside Elliot Friedman, the author of said fine feature, which comes out normally Wednesdays, but sometimes Tuesdays at sportsnet.ca. Schedule right here.
I have to tell you, I'm aiming for Tuesdays now because I know you like to prepare, and I don't want to spring it to you on Wednesdays. So you have given me a goal, Jeff, of getting it done on Tuesdays.
I know. I'm such a stern taskmaster.
You have made me more goal-oriented.
texted you last night, hey, man, can you flip me 31? Hey, dummy, it's already out. Check our website.
I wasn't going to bring that up. Thanks for reading, co-host.
Way to go. Okay, let's conclude the podcast. And by the way, I know we sort of solicited out there for tweets at hashtag Ask31. We're going to start doing that in earnest next week. A couple of janitorial things we want to do here. But first, I want to get your final thoughts on thought number two, which is the NHL. I'll just read it. NHL testing new skills competition idea Monday in Tampa. Not yet ready to reveal them. You talked about a couple of these things Saturday on headlines. Some details slipping out. Accuracy competition, adding a fifth target. Instead of players choosing to shoot one at a light on the target, will force the shooter to go for that one. So I like that idea, sort of randomly, okay,
yes.
Top left is going, boom, you got to hit that. Bottom right is going, now you got to hit that, as opposed to player's choice. I dig that. Let me float this one out at you.
Okay, and by the way, I do believe that's what they're looking at in a couple of cases, is creating randomness. For example, there's like a, I think there's a puck-carrying challenge.
Right.
And what, making it so that you don't know what the course is. Like, you know something's coming, but there are options to it. That's what they're trying to do.
You know, at the top prospects game, I'm not sure if they did this last year in Quebec City or if it was the one previous in Vancouver. Vancouver, for sure. Not sure if they did in Quebec City last year, but there was this one test that the guys did. It was a speed test, but instead of just sprinting the length of the ice, what they had to do was sprint, and at the blue line, they would have to slow down and get around essentially two pylons, but you wouldn't know which way to pivot. So one light would go off telling you which way to go, and then you have to get to the other pylon, another light would go. So you have that spontaneous moment of, boom, now I need to react. I don't know which way I'm going to go. I got to prepare myself for both. And that's how they gauged who was quicker in a simulated game experience.
I love that idea. I don't know that that's what they're doing here, but I do think that's the kind of idea they're thinking of. You know, I don't know if you remember it, but earlier in the year we showed. So Connor McDavid does 99% of his training with Gary Roberts. Yeah. 1 week a year, he goes with Matt Nichol to the BioSteel camp in Toronto. And one of the things that Matt Nichol was generous enough to share with us is, if you do like a 100-meter dash, you know, there's a lot of guys who are really fast. Tyler Seguin's really fast. Wayne Simmonds really fast. Connor McDavid's really fast. He said, if you do that, where you go and then sort of partway through, there's two gates, one on the right and one on the left,
yep.
And the light comes on, you have to process and
same
turn.
Same idea.
Put on your feet instead of skates. That's where McDavid really shines, the ability to make that move at high speed with both his mind and his body. I think that's a great idea.
That's exactly what they did in Vancouver.
I could see GM saying, I don't want my guys doing that.
That's right.
In case part of their body doesn't go with them.
Yep, I get
but
that part.
I love the idea. And I do think that's kind of what they're thinking of, is how can we show their ability to make decisions at high speed. You know, a few years ago when they were talking about World Cup TV, the PA in particular had an idea of, can we televise this differently? And one of the things the players said was, how can we do a better job of showing some of the things we're capable of doing? And I think this is tailored a bit to that.
Interesting. Sticking with players and sticking with the All-Star game, the previous podcast I did with Greg, MVSW,
yes,
the one
I'm familiar with.
You're
that.
Vaguely familiar with that cozy little podcast. The one thing that, I mean, the only thing perhaps that we ever really achieved outside of some laughs and some hockey talk was helping to get John Scott to the All-Star game.
Yes,
that will never happen again. That, like, there are too many roadblocks. It's never going to happen again. It turned into the perfect story for hockey fans and certainly for John, and that can never be replicated. But I was thinking about this the last little while. What can be done, not like that, but in that spirit? And I don't think it can be done by fans anymore. I think that groundswell for the anti-hero is gone. It's not going to happen anymore. But the one area that I think the potential for it does exist. See, I always like the non-All-Star getting into the All-Star game, the consummate underdog story. What is this guy doing here? How about this idea? Fans vote on the captains. NHL fills in the rosters. But each team has one open spot that the captain chooses. And it doesn't have to be an All-Star. That captain can choose any player in his conference. It can be a buddy, a guy that's great in the room, the light in the mood guy, the guy who's played 15 years in the NHL and, you know, is buddies with everybody and, quote-unquote, deserves it. to get into the All-Star game.
A guy who's not going to be mad if he doesn't get to go on vacation.
A guy that's going to be mad because a lot of these guys just cherish that chance to go down south a little bit. But we so seldom ask hockey players what they want. What would you like? Like, how often do you actually go to a hockey? What would you like in the All-Star game? I want to go with my buddy. I want to go with my pal. Like, one of the things last year, John Scott and Brent Burns together, it was almost a TV show. It was fantastic. Do you ever think there would be an appetite for those captains to choose one player to come along with the All-Star team?
I have no like, as I've gotten older in life, I'm a big believer in try everything.
I'm with you, dude.
Some things work. Some things don't. If the players want to do it, why not?
One of the things that I've found, and this is, I think, a failing of our industry, of broadcasting, is we always put someone like me in between hockey players. And one of the things that I learned when I did the World Cup, we did Facebook Live during the World Cup, me, Colby Armstrong, and Ryan Whitney. And one of the things that I learned was if you just let hockey players talk to each other, it's really entertaining. I mean, how many times have we sat
between two Zambonis with Ryan Kessler and Kevin Bieksa?
You know, it's like just let players talk to one another. Why does it always have to be mediated by someone like us? If you just create an environment where players can talk, because how many times have you been in a social setting or even just sitting in the green room watching hockey games with two ex-players and listen to them talk as they watch the games? To me, it's really fascinating.
Do you
seem to always mitigate that?
We don't get it in Canada, but for our American listeners, they will be familiar with this. In the NCAA playoffs for football, ESPN airs an alternate channel, and it's coaches watching the game. And, for example, David Cutcliffe was one of the coaches who watched the national championship game. He's the head football coach at Duke, and he's Peyton Manning's passing guru, or at least was, because I'm not sure if Peyton Manning's throwing any more passes. And I heard he was just phenomenal. Like, listening to him watch the game in real time and making his comments. Like, I would love to see. I wonder if the day ever comes where there's an alternate channel where the players watch the Stanley Cup Final.
Players watching the Stanley Cup Final. Coaches watching the Stanley Cup Final.
See, I don't want to hear them talk. I can listen to players talk at any time. I want to hear them talk watching a game.
I'm with you.
And as a rights holder, if they don't want to do that because they're worried it's going to siphon their audience or cannibalize their audience, what I would do is I'd say, okay, here's four players. You sit down, you watch the game. After the game's over, we're going to package it. And on the off day, we're going to release it. So you can watch
that
the
becomes
day
like
after.
The DVD extra.
Yes.
Essentially.
And that's what I would do. So game one in the Stanley Cup Final last year is Pittsburgh-Nashville, you get Kevin Bieksa, who I think if he wants will be able to walk right out of the off the ice and into the broadcast booth.
100%.
You get who else do you want?
You know who's real good is Carl Alsner.
Carl Alsner, Erik Karlsson.
Yep.
Like I don't know where these guys are. You might have to.
All defensemen, by the way.
You might have to get four North Americans. You know, Carey Price. You know, P.K. Subban, if his team is not playing, whatever. You get four guys, say, guys, we're bringing you into the studio, and you are going to watch the game. And tomorrow night, off day between games one and two, we're going to package, this is four players on game one of the Stanley Cup Final.
I love it. I love it. I think it's a hit. Even if it's not a television property, as an online property, I think that's a home run.
Oh, you could if you can't sell ads for that, find a new sales force.
All right.
That one's going to get me in trouble, by the way.
Did you get any flack for the
ads? No, they were good. They were great. They all wrote to me about it. They said it was true.
Got a couple of texts from some of the executives here. Like, are any secrets safe after talking about trade deadline on our teaser podcast? Thanks, by the way, everyone who subscribed and who's left some really nice comments for it. We hope we can live up to your expectations, which are lofty. And let's just finish up the podcast, the first one, by talking about, I mean, I've done podcasts now for 6 years, did them with Greg, and now looking forward to doing it with you. Why are you interested in podcasts?
You know, I've thought about it. I mean, I liked yours with Greg a lot. I thought it was a great podcast. You know, that's not my personality. I emceed a golf tournament, and my buddy sat me down afterwards and said, you know, we've got something to tell you. And I go, what's that? And they go, you're not very funny. You think you are, but you're not. But I wanted to do something, and I've always thought it would be interesting to do it. I'd like to do it a little bit differently. I think this was our toe where we dipped it in the water. I know we're going to take some a lot more questions in the future. But I think the other thing I'd like to do is I'd like to maybe talk to some people who we don't hear from a lot. I mean, there are a lot of good podcast guests out there, but I think a lot of them are familiar. One of the things I'd like to do is maybe track down some people who don't speak as much. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, they're probably going to say no because they don't speak for a reason.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm willing to take suggestions on maybe who you'd like to hear from that we don't speak to very often.
Send those in. Hashtag.
Do Ask 31.
Ask 31.
Keep it all there.
For all of it.
Yeah.
For guest suggestions. But you and I, you know, we sat down last week and we sort of made a wish list of guests. And I think the caveat for all of it is why? Like, why do you want this person on? Like, to me, there has to be a reason or a story as opposed to just, well, we haven't talked about the Buffalo Sabres for a while, so let's bring on someone to talk about the Sabres. I think there has to be something attached to it,
yes.
Whether it's a story, whether it's a reason, or someone that can advance something. Yes. Otherwise, you're just stuck with me and Elliot.
And we don't want it to make it too much like this one, where we're just droning on and on for 45 minutes to an hour.
Right, so we'll wrap it. Back in 7 days for 31 Thoughts, the podcast. Thanks so much for joining us. Thank you so much for the downloads. We appreciate each and every one of them. All the comments, all the Twitter love, all the Reddit love, which is substantial as well. Thank you, and a shout out to the Reddit community. Elliot and I will return in 7 days for more of 31 Thoughts, the podcast. We'll talk to you next week.